Well, good morning and welcome. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. James and I did not coordinate the John 10 reading. But I want us to ponder on that aspect of the nature of God today. I want us to ponder the nature of God. And I want us to think about it through the lens of a shepherd, as we read about in Psalm 23 and in John 10. God, who needs nothing, serves the needy. A God who needs nothing, a shepherd who is far and away above the sheep, chooses to serve those who are most in need. An author by the name of Harold Bell Wright has a classic tale about a minister. This minister fails to recognize what we might call God's self-sufficiency. God is sufficient. There is nothing that he needs that is outside of him. If there was something that God needed, or some standard he needed to live up to that was outside of him, then he wouldn't be God. This author writes about a minister who struggled to lead his people because he didn't know the shepherd, and he didn't know how to serve because he didn't know the shepherd. And so this minister, you don't get the backstory until the end of the book, but the book opens and this man, full of wisdom and knowledge and experience and defeat, is walking into a place called Mutton Hollow. What do you think they have at Mutton Hollow? Right? I have some mutton lately. Put some mutton on your pizza. So he walks into this place, and suddenly he's not a minister or a professor or a respected man, but he's tending sheep, and he's hanging out with these backwoods hillbilly folk from the hills. The minister of the city becomes, can you guess the name of the book? Becomes the shepherd of the hills. And the lessons that he missed in school about God, God now teaches him in the school of his creation. What is the lesson of the hills and the streams and the trees and the creatures and the mountains? What is that lesson? It's a lesson that science and the study of God, where they should come together, and we walk outside and we see the world operating as it is, and we should realize God doesn't need us to make this work. God is sufficient, and he needs nothing. Every created thing, think about this, every created thing depends upon something else that is created. That's pretty simple and easy to understand. Everything that is created relies upon something else that is created. Now, what I'm going to say next is profoundly simple, but profoundly mind-boggling. An uncreated God, you just stop there and wrestle with that for the rest of your life. A God who is uncreated and eternal depends upon nothing. He's not like us, or the mountains, or the trees, or the creatures that need something. But here's where the analogy of the shepherd comes into play. The God who needs no one, the shepherd who is so far above his flock, chooses to work amongst that flock. The God who needs no one, when faith is present, will work through anyone. Thank God for that, right? The God who needs nothing, when faith is present, can work through anyone. This is the message of the Good Shepherd. This is the message of the Shepherd of the Hills. That this Good Shepherd voluntarily, not just voluntarily, joyously takes responsibility for his creation by serving his people. Now we've come to the time where we're going to play the game that we've been playing recently called Name That Prophet, right? Another round of Name That Prophet. We've got two of them out of the way, so you can cross out Obadiah and you can cross out Joel. Remember the Minor Prophets, those 12 short little books at the end of the Old Testament? They're roadways to God and to God's people. If you want to know something about God and you want to know something about his people, then spend time with these Minor Prophets. Today's prophet is actually two prophets. It's not just one. Does that improve your chances or does that hurt your chances of getting at least one of them right? One of these men was from Judah, right? Israel at this time has been split into two nations. One of these men was from Judah, but he went to preach in Israel. And the other one was from Judah, and he preached to Judah. One of the men was not a prophet, nor was he a son of the prophets. And he left his flock of sheep. He was a shepherd. And he went to show people what a shepherd looks like. That was one of them. He didn't go to school of theology. He went to the school of hard knocks. And he showed people what a shepherd was. The other prophet who came just a little bit after him, he was a prophet and he was of the school of the prophets. He was of a prophetic lineage. He wasn't a shepherd, but he predicted the shepherd to come. Any guess as to who we're talking about here? We're going to be spending time with Amos, who was a shepherd and was the son of a shepherd, and Micah, who predicted the coming shepherd. Now, they had different occupations. They preached to different locations, but here's the one thing they had in common. They preached to people who were abundantly blessed, but recklessly irresponsible. They both preached to a people who were abundantly blessed, but recklessly irresponsible. Back in 1 Kings, this is way back at the beginning, Israel was abundantly blessed. It was the time of Solomon. They were as rich as they were ever going to get. And Solomon has died, and the kingdom is split. And one of the kings, Jeroboam, in 1 Kings chapter 12, he thinks to himself, if I let the people go and worship the true God in the place where God wants to be worshipped, then guess who they're going to follow and be like? If you follow the shepherd, then you go where the shepherd goes. If they go to the place where God wants to be worshipped, then they're going to follow him as king. And guess what? That's not what the kings wanted. They wanted to be the ones that everyone followed and were impressed with. And so he took the places of worship and he put one way up in the northern part of Israel. And he put one way down in the southern part of Israel. And he made these golden calves. And he says, go worship these things that are created by me, because then guess who they're really going to be looking to and worshiping? It's going to be him, not God. 1 Kings 12, verse 28. So the king, Jeroboam, took counsel and made two calves of gold. And he said to the people, you have gone up to Jerusalem long enough. Behold your gods. And he's pointing at these golden calves, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. And he set one in Bethel in the south, and he put one in Dan, which was in the north. And this thing became a sin, for the people went as far as Dan to be before one. People act like the thing that they worship. People act like the thing that they give their praise to and their time and their money. And it wasn't too long before this abundantly wealthy and rich people suddenly became recklessly irresponsible. What Jeroboam was doing is the opposite of shepherd leadership or servant leadership. He's not serving the people. He's manipulating the people so that they will follow him. From 1 Kings chapter 12, let's go to 2 Kings chapter 14. You know how many good kings Israel had between 1 Kings 12 and 2 Kings 14? They had zero good kings. You know how many evil kings they had? They had 20 of them. 2 Kings chapter 14. Starting in verse 24. Now we come to another king, Jeroboam, the same name as the one in 1 Kings 12. But this is Jeroboam 2. Not his son, not junior, but on down the line a ways. 2 Kings 14, starting in verse 24. And Jeroboam did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. He's still recklessly irresponsible. But notice in verse 25, he restored the border of Israel from Lebo Hamath as far as the Sea of Arabah, according to the word of the Lord, the God of Israel, which he spoke by his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet, who was from Gath-Hepher. For the Lord saw the affliction of Israel was very bitter, for there was none left bond or free, and there was none to help Israel. The people had fallen into disarray, but God had once again blessed them, incredibly, abundantly blessed. But how were they acting? They weren't taking their blessing and being responsible with it. How are they God's nation? How are they so unlike God? What is it that they're doing? Let's go over to our prophets here. Let's turn over to Amos. Amos, picture this old shepherd, and he has just got done traveling up to this place where he is going to preach. And he's not a softy. This isn't a guy with soft hands and pale skin and a man who is weak. This is a man who would step in front of you and say, "That's a man, and that's a harsh man." He spends time out of doors all the time, and he's tough, and he's strong, and he's gruff. Read through the book of Amos sometime, and he doesn't have a lot of nice things to say, and he doesn't make any apology for these hard things that he has to say. And he's clever, too, because he knows how people work. He's calling out Israel, but before he gets to calling them out, Amos chapter 1, he goes through and he says, think about all these foreign nations, how they have not obeyed God. And people say, yes, we see how they have not obeyed God. That's wrong. They're not following him. And then he turns to them and he says, but I'm not really talking about them. I'm talking about you. Amos chapter 2, verse 4. For three transgressions of Judah and for four, I will not revoke the punishment, because they have rejected the law of the Lord and have not kept his statutes. They weren't following the shepherd. They weren't following God. And how was that displaying itself? Go down to verse 6 of Amos chapter 2. They sell the righteous for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals. Those who trample the head of the poor into the dust of the earth and turn aside the way of the afflicted. The shepherd comes and is mighty and yet spends his time caring for those who are most in need. Israel was mighty and rich, and yet they were ignoring the poor and the needy. And they were selling them for the price of sandals. And they were ignoring the righteous ones. Remember, we're pondering the nature of God. God is all sufficient. And God needs nothing. And yet, who does God spend his time investing in? In people who need him more than anything. Is that the image we're getting of Israel and Judah? Are they taking the wonderful blessings they have and using them to help those who are in need? Micah came a couple years after Amos. And I can't say that this statement is a fact, but I can't help but wondering if he thought back to that old, wild-haired, gruff shepherd and would tell people, remember that fella? I'm here to continue his message. Micah chapter 1, verse 9, for the wound of Israel is incurable. Their wound was keeping the blessing they had to themselves and not helping those who were in need. But he says now that this wound has come to Judah. It has reached to the gate of my people and to Jerusalem. They didn't know how to serve each other because they didn't know who the shepherd was. God is all sufficient, and yet he is a servant to those who are needy, and he is a builder of people. Amos chapter 3, keep your finger in Micah, but go back to Amos chapter 3. Amos chapter 3, verse 2, the first part of this verse says, you only have I known of all the families of the earth. God says, you are my chosen people. What a blessing it is to be the chosen people of God. And yet turn over to Amos chapter 6. Verse 4, the same people, his chosen people. So this is like your favorite person that you choose and you bring beside. And this is what God says to them. Woe to those who lie on their beds of ivory and stretch themselves out on their couches and eat lambs from the flock and calves from the midst of the stall, who sing idle songs to the sound of the harp and like David invent for themselves instruments of music, who drink wine in bowls and anoint themselves with the finest oils. But they are not grieved over the ruin of Joseph. This is a privileged and wealthy people. And Amos is not saying that there's something wrong with that. He's saying that you sit back and you have no concern for those who are in need. Back to Amos chapter 3, verse 2. You only have I known of all the families of the earth. Therefore, because of this, because you have not followed the example of the shepherd, I will punish you for all of your iniquities. Go back to Micah chapter 5. This verse shows up again, as we read a couple weeks ago in the book of Matthew, when the coming of the Messiah is being predicted. This is how the wise people in Jerusalem knew how to tell Herod that Jesus was coming to Bethlehem. I want to go through this verse, and I want you to listen to the words of Micah. I want you to listen to his description of the shepherd, but then I want you to think of Amos and think of the image that he would give us as a shepherd of God's people. You ever spent any time around someone who's been around livestock? You ever kept sheep or chickens or any kind of animal? What's one of the first things you notice? Someone who's been out slogging around with the animals and they come inside, and what's the first thing that hits you? Maybe before you even see them. There you go, the smell. So Amos did not come to church on Sunday dressed in a suit, smelling well with his Right Guard deodorant on. Right? He got up here and people said, "Whoa, that fella stinks. That fella smells." Because he'd been out spending time with the sheep. Micah chapter 5, verse 2. But you, Bethlehem of Ephrathah, you who are too little to be among the clans of Judah, from you shall come forth for me one who is to be ruler in Israel. Where is the shepherd coming from? Some lofty place where he's totally out of touch with his people? No, he's coming from the midst of his sheep. Micah is saying that the shepherd smells like the sheep. It's interesting, though, that as long as Amos had been with sheep, you know, he never turned into a sheep. He smelled like a sheep, but he was always the shepherd. We have to recognize that about God. God is able to be amongst his people, but it doesn't make him filthy. He knows us because he is amongst us, but it doesn't cause him stain. It doesn't bring him down. That's part of his self-sufficiency. The shepherd smells like his sheep. The second part of the verse there in chapter 5, verse 2. It says, this is the one who is coming from of old, from ancient of days. This is a silly example, okay? I'm just going to tell you ahead of time. This is total nonsense. But there's this really silly cartoon out there. It's called Bambi versus Godzilla, okay? And no matter what Bambi does, it always ends with Godzilla's foot smashing poor little Bambi, right? It's silliness. The same thing is if you put Amos against a sheep, right? It's a ring, and they're going to duke it out, right? It's a boxing match between Amos and the sheep. Is the sheep even going to know what's coming? Maybe. I don't know if a sheep is stronger than a person. But the sheep stands no chance against Amos in a feat of strength or a feat of wits, right? That'd be a fun game show. Amos versus the sheep. Who wants to be a millionaire, right? There's no comparison between Amos and the sheep, or an age. I mean, even in terms of age, even Amos as a man outlives the sheep, right? This term, ancient of days, is a powerful old term referring to what James talked about, that this seed that's Jesus has been here. God has been around forever. And yet, voluntarily, God chooses to be concerned and take responsibility for the lives of the sheep. This is a powerful leader. Amos was a powerful man, and yet he chose to spend his time with sheep. Amos was smelly. Amos was humble, which we have just talked about. Micah chapter 5, verses 4 and 5. And he will stand and shepherd the flock in the strength of the Lord. And then going on to verse 5. And he shall be their peace. What do you think of when you think of the word meek? Somebody who is meek. Do you think it's somebody who is weak? Is meekness weakness? That's not how the Bible talks about. Meekness is the combination of strength and of peace. And you would get that sense being in Amos's presence. He would have this rod, and with that rod, he would run off the wolves, and he would beat them, and he would fight them and chase them off. He would even use it on his own sheep. If they were wandering, you know what a shepherd did? If he had a stubborn sheep, he would go and break one of their legs so the sheep wouldn't wander off. Has God ever broken one of your legs so that you would quit wandering off? There's no comfort in a staff that is not rigid. And yet for all of Amos's gruffness and harshness, at the end of the day, the sheep would come to him and he would have led them over obstacles and into safety. And he would mend their wounds and he would guard them and protect them. Go over to Micah chapter 7, verse 14. Amos was smelly, he was humble, he was meek. A Bible class teacher once asked her student, said, "What's the job of an elder, right, of the leaders of the church?" And the young boy said, "Well, it's to overlook the people, right? To overlook the people, to not see them." Is that the job, to overlook? He had confused overlook and oversee. It's the shepherd's job to oversee the people. And notice what kind of oversight Amos would have given to his sheep. Micah 7, verse 14. "Shepherd your people with your staff, the flock of your inheritance, who dwell alone in a forest in the midst of a garden land. Let them graze in Bashan and Gilead, as in the days of old." Amos would not have... He may have talked to the sheep, I don't know. But he wouldn't have gotten out and spoke with them and said, "Okay, I'm going to logic you into doing what I'm supposed to do, or I'm going to command you." He led by example, and he led by overseeing the sheep. He let them graze, and he let them pasture. And so a sheep that would eat, and that would sleep, and that would walk around, and that would grow under the oversight of Amos, that would be a healthy sheep. I bet Amos believed that less command was better. Less government was better. It's why things sometimes take time. Amos would allow each sheep to grow at its own rate. Now, if it wandered too far or some threat came, he would take over. But frankly, a lot of Amos's job was boring. Sitting back and watching and being patient and shepherding and looking over. Not overlooking, but looking over the sheep. This is an image of God. God has it all, and yet freely gives it all away. God is a master, and yet he chooses to be our servant. God is without age, and yet he chooses to know our lifespan. God is a perfect judge, and yet he made himself a perfect sacrifice. God is all-knowing, and yet he chooses to be a teacher of simple people. God is not marred by sin, and yet he lives unstained among sinful man. So what's our application? What do we do with this concept that God is a powerful, talented, patient shepherd, and yet chooses to engage in our lives? Well, very simply, the first thing, and this can be your verse to think on and meditate on this week, Psalms 80, verses 1 through 2. Turn over to Psalm verse 80. "Give ear, O shepherd of Israel, who lead Joseph like a flock." This conjures that idea of the humble shepherd. "You are enthroned upon the cherubim and shine forth. dwell on this verse and think about this idea of a shepherding God. Worship and meditate and think about this. How can a God who is so above us choose to serve us? God is the source of blessing. God is the headwater of everything that is good and pure, and yet He gives voluntarily to men. What should a church then do that is abundantly blessed by this God? We should ponder the nature of God, that we ought to be like this God. Dwell on that verse and think about the implications of that. The second thing is a bit of a question, and I'll wrap up with this thought. Something I'd like help answering. The minister in Harold Bell Wright's story, you don't find this out until the end, and I won't tell you how it concludes, because you can read the book for yourself. But the thing that crushed him was that this minister had failed to show his own child the shepherd. He's driven out into the hills because in all of his work and all of his busyness, he had failed to point his own child to the true nature of God. Now, that's a humbling thought. And it challenges us to think, those we teach, whether it's our children or others that we come in contact with, are they thrilled by the idea of a shepherd? Do we inspire people to take responsibility for the blessings that they have been blessed with? Do our children someday want to raise effective leaders and be leaders themselves? Do our young men want to be elders? Do our girls want to marry elder-worthy men? Are we showing those that we teach how to take their abundant blessings and turn them into effective ministry? Church, I need help with this, and we all need help because this is the nature of God that we are approaching together. We walk with Him together, and we ask Him to help us. God, help us to be like You. Help us to see You as the true shepherd, and help us to point others toward You. Whatever our station in life is, God has placed us in a pasture and He has given us people to care for. He has blessed you. Will you follow His example as the good shepherd? Because abundant blessing carries with it the duty to serve. Abundant blessing carries with it a responsibility and a duty to serve. Let's walk toward this God and let's worship this God. And let's seek to be the shepherd leaders that our God is. Thank you for your attention and your time this morning. We have a song prepared. If there's any need that the church can help you with, come forward while we stand and sing together.